Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
It's so beautiful.
It's
what I love about America. That
it
song.
Really is. It just want to just salute.
Yeah, it's the greatest country in the world.
Yeah, we're patriots.
USA, USA. That's why you stormed the Capitol.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I got there on the 7th. I was late. I didn't get the memo.
I was late to this thing. Well, Jenny, please. We have a guest of epic proportions. Not physically. He's slim down, I think.
But we do. I believe this is even someone that you worked with.
No. Our ships passed in the night.
That's disappointing.
But I'll tell that story.
Yes. Okay. Okay, one of the funniest people ever and one of the stars of Roseanne and also True Lies. If you've never seen that movie, I recently watched it for the first time.
Oh, he's great. It was his breakout.
It was absolutely one of the funniest people. Everyone, it is Tom Arnold. Give it up.
Woo! Hi, guys. Hi, everybody.
Hi. Applause, applause. Tom, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, yeah, thank you for having me, guys. I'm fans of both you guys.
I had early in my career an uncanny ability to join a show after a contentious breakout. So my first sitcom was Evening Shade with Burt Reynolds. And as I was starting, he ended with Lonnie Anderson.
Yeah.
But recommitted himself to vodka. So that was fun. And then I got into Roseanne at the point where you guys had ended. I was like, so I'm not good for stars in relationships, I think. But
Well, you know, Burt Reynolds, what a awesome, because filming on, I think an Evening Shade film on the lot with the Roseanne show with us.
Yes, yeah.
Run into him, and I'm like, holy shit, Burt Reynolds, man. And I'll tell you, Lonnie. Bert is no longer with us, as you know.
Yes.
Lonnie looks amazing. Like, I do these Comic-Con things, and she'll show up.
Oh, really?
She's a freaking 10, man, still. She's like...
Really?
Yeah, she's amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah. She's what, 95 now? I mean, I don't even know.
Yeah, she is. But let me tell you, the I Dream of Jeannie is 92, and she just kills it. She kills it.
I've talked about this before, I think on this podcast, but Jeannie, I was just a kid watching reruns, but that was when I realized, oh, I'm straight. Like it was like, she's making me feel things where I pee. Like, what is that? So yeah. So Barbara Eden, I don't care. Like with her last breath, I would lay with her.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I started doing these, autograph shows, whatever. I have a lot of legal bills. So I started doing it. First one, I was nervous because I thought nobody's going to give shit. Can I say shit?
You can say whatever the fuck you want
about me. Yeah, and I did this, the Hollywood one. And I look over and Joe Collins is there. Number one. Like, oh, yeah, you know, that's something. And then I look over and Sophia Loren is there. And I love Sophia Loren, right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out a way to get up and talk to her. I talked to her a while back, a few years ago, And I get right up, that I thought, she looks amazing. I get up, I'm talking to her. And after about 3 minutes, I realize, oh, it's not, it's an impersonator who kind of looks like the older, the Sophia Loren from wherever.
Yeah. And
I you know, having a very intimate conversation about seeing her at the House of Blues with her kid, and it's so good. And I realized, oh, this is, and I don't want to embarrass the guy because,
yeah,
like he is so good at it. I mean, I got his information. We went, we peed together, which was super funny for me. But, you know, it took me a minute. You see some of these impersonators and you're like, that looks like I could, a guy from Iowa like me could believe for a minute at least those are the real folks. So,
oh, for sure.
You know, those people get laid like crazy when they go to the Midwest.
Yeah, well, that, you know, people think we're repressed, yeah, or the women are repressed, or whatever. That's just absolutely not true. In fact, the Iowa Writers Workshop, a long time ago, I met Kurt Vonnegut. He, you know, we have these great writers that come through there, and he said, "I said, why? Well, it must be hard going to Iowa City, and when you're used to kind of the big city." And he's like, "Well, a lot of writers do it because the women are very extremely friendly and excited, and you know, our the women's sports when I was growing up were bigger than the men's sports. Like, it's not, you know, women, the girls work on the farm with us. If the father dies and the girl is 15 or 16, she takes over. So there's no, you know, there, you know, you grow up like that, which is a great way to grow up, and everybody's kind of in it together. And so, but the women are, you know, in Iowa City, University of Iowa, yeah, they'll tell you what they want to do. You better do it.
No, well, that workshop, that writer's workshop is world famous. I mean, it's, yeah, it's like all of those, you know, at the time it was like every big writer was, you know, a part of that, and still, you know, but
they still do. They have a great, we're very proud of, I'm an Iowa Hawkeye, obviously. Yeah. We're very proud of that, and the connections in Hollywood, you know, people go from there to do jobs like you guys. So
it's, yeah, and it's a real boot camp. Like, it's a real, like it's like there are tears, there's like a lot of, every story I've read, I've heard Kurt Vonnegut talk about it, and so it's yeah, and he's my favorite author, so it's
he's amazing.
And so you went to the University of Iowa.
Yes,
is that where you're from, man?
Well, yeah, I'm from Ottumwa, Iowa, which is southeast Iowa, and I worked on the kill floor of a meatpacking plant for 3 years after high school to save money so I could go to the University of Iowa. Like, my dad, you know, I grew up in this family where my dad's like, when you're 18, he boxed my stuff up and said, all right, you know, and a lot of that was great because I never assumed anybody would buy. I got my first car, I had to mow yards or bale hay or detail the corn and save $600 a day. I turned 16, I got my license and a car, and, you know, and then of course I smashed it immediately, but I never assumed there was any backup. He made it pretty clear, you know, my kids, when I'd say, Dad, I need money for whatever, he'd pull his pockets out and go, I got no money. Okay. But my kids, I'll do that with my kids because I think it's hilarious. And my son will go, no, actually, there's $38 in your pants that are hanging in the closet. and you know, that's why I don't have guns in the house.
Yeah, right? I know.
Because he, you know, he's nine. When I was nine, I was like, as soon as my dad left, he'd say, stay the F away from my guns. If anybody, you know, as soon as he left, me and my four younger brothers would just try to bust into his safe to get his gun, you know. That was our whole thing immediately.
Well, my dad's entire Playboy collection wound up under my bed, so it was very similar.
That's another thing. You go to Hollywood, you have these Playboys that are so important to you growing up because, you know, and then you someone like Shannon Tweed plays your wife on a show, like with me, just look at her like, oh my God, I can't believe, because, you know, you have their beautiful picture up and they're, you know, the classic ones, and then you're meeting these people and you're like, holy hell, man. She was important to my life, I tell you.
Oh my God.
You want to thank her for her services when, you know, like, salute.
No, I know. I think, like, I someone has to keep me away from Linda Carter if I meet her.
Oh God.
Oh my God. Actually, I would feel the same way about Linda Carter.
I grew up without a mother, so I had to see, you know.
Wow.
That's how I saw. I had no idea what women, you know,
looked like. Well, I used to see my mom's tits all the time, and they were fantastic.
No, I would watch Wonder Woman, and my dad, I loved Wonder Woman, and my dad would, like, remind me that it was about to come on. And I was like, that's so sweet. He wants to watch TV with me, not realizing that he was like, fuck yeah, Linda Carter.
She's really cool. She's a cool chick, too, man.
She's really cool.
She's awesome. I follow her on Twitter. Yeah, she's amazing.
Love her, yeah, Twitter. Love you guys on Twitter, too.
Yeah,
no, but she, but, and speaking of Twitter, I mean, I think that's where you, really, the only interactions we've had, I think, Tom, and, were during, like, in the heat of all of the Trump stuff and all of that. Like, I've really appreciated all you've done, and you always sort of came, you know, when shit was going down, I mean, even when it wasn't me, it was like you came to people's defenses and you talked about it. And I know you did everything in your. I want to hear about a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated about this, about the journey with the Mark Burnett tape. So for those who don't.
Yes, know, please.
But for those who don't know, you know, Mark Burnett, you know, he produced Celebrity Apprentice, and there's all of this raw footage that's obviously out there. And we given what we know about Donald Trump on Mike. One can only, and we've already heard anecdotally, all of that kind of stuff that he did off mic, and not that any of it apparently mattered, but it might have mattered early. You know, he immured us, like he could have done some good. But what's your, tell me about that journey for you.
Well, you know, I've known Donald Trump for 40 years, and he was, you know, he'd come on my sports show. He'd, you know, Roseanne and I did an HBO special at his, one of the Trump Castle or something, like 1989 or something. And, you know, I always thought, well, he's a funny, interesting guy. You know, that guy, he's a guy that when we're getting ready to do the special, he said, listen, I have a friend who will load us at Duesenberg. I think that's what it's called, the big car, the old car. And he'll, I'll get it, whatever it costs, I'll pay for it. And he goes, what I'll do is I'll drive it on stage and be Roseanne's chauffeur. Well, then I thought that's hilarious. So now he's in the special. But, and then, you know, 2 months later, I get a call from somebody at HBO. They're like, the guy that he that packed up that car and drove it 6 hours to Atlantic City never got paid by Donald Trump. And so I was like, we got to, that's a hilarious story. We got to pay that guy. We did. And then, you know, he wanted me to be on The Apprentice.
Uh-huh.
Call him and Mark Burnett call. And he's very, you know, it's not that I didn't need the money because they do offer. You know, you get $250,000, you get a script deal, you get whatever. And he is very, but I kept thinking, well, what is the, are you really his apprentice? And do you have to do that? But I, you know, I always gave it serious consideration. And, but I never did it. When this stuff started, I knew about his outtakes. I had a sports show called Best Dad Sports Show, period. And my clip producer, a brother, was the executive producer of The Apprentice.
Wow.
Eric Van Wagenen and his brother. And, you know, clip producers on sports shows, man, they cut stuff together. And, and so there was a reel, of sort of a Christmas reel of Trump, some of the worst of Trump. And the one brother, for the last 10 years, he was the last guy to speak to Trump before every take. And, you know, because it's a game show, legally, because of the thing that in the set in the 50s where they had a game show scandal, there's a federal law. They have to film the host from the time he gets out of the car until the time he gets back in the car at night. And, you know, they had 18 cameras going and they had him mic'd up. And so you could just, anybody would eventually do stuff, but he, you know, he was just so much worse. So he's gonna run for president, which I thought this is just bananas. And another thing, I had there's so much overlap with me and Trump that I can't be that good of a person. But another buddy, Chuck LaBella, had gone to Russia with him in 2013 for the Miss Universe. He worked on The Apprentice and Miss Universe. He was Trump's body man. And he got back, when he got back in 2013, he's like, holy shit, you won't believe what he did. This happened in the hotel, this with Putin, this and that.
Yeah.
And Putin said he wants him to be president. He really went to his head, all this shit. Well, then suddenly in 2015, when he's like, I'm going to run for president, you're like, well, I call up these guys. Hey, we got to talk about that publicly. We got to do this and that. And so I couldn't get any cooperation. So I did. And like with the body bag guy, who was a very nice guy.
Yeah.
Trump, you know, he complained about me going public to Trump, and Trump had Michael Cohen called and hired a lawyer for the guy, who, you know, I guess they hired this one lawyer for everybody, for Stormy Daniels, for Karen, and so that was their way of, you know, so that guy went completely to the dark side. So as they're getting ready to do this thing, you know, I'm calling Mark Burnett, and I saw Mark Burnett over at Arnold Schwarzenegger's holiday party. I go, I need to, for the country, we need to hear those tapes. He goes, Tom, listen, number one, he shows me a picture on his phone. It's his kid. He goes, he was the ring bearer at Trump's wedding. I just want you to know, my son. And he said, nothing. Trump wants the tapes. You want the tape. I'm not going to give them to anybody. So I think it's kind of even. And before I left that, the executive producer guy, that bandwagon guy, was there. And I kind of got into it with a couple people that I really respected there.
Yeah.
That said, Hillary is the more like Hitler than Trump. Like she, the way she's, and it was almost like a full on fist fight. And then this, to his credit, the one Van Wagen, a brother, got between me and a bunch of people and said, I know Trump better than everybody in this room. And he is the worst human being I've ever met in my life. And then I was like, that's my exit. I got to get out of here.
That's a blow to the
scene. Thank you. Good night.
I go outside and there's a valet and there'd been an accident. And I'm waiting for my car. I'm like, oh, I just want to get out of here. And Clint Eastwood comes up behind me and he goes, you know, Trump is a bonehead. He goes, you know, the worst thing about getting elected mayor is then you got to be mayor. Like, it was a nice moment. I mean, Clint Eastwood's very conservative, but, you know, so I just kept it up. I mean, and then it went to, I get the show for Vice, the Huff and the Trump tapes, which was great fun. You know, I got to do, had people go to Russia to interview the sex workers and do all this stuff. But the best part was I got to work with some great journalists too, like Jane Mayer and Isikoff and Korn and a bunch of people and kind of do this thing. And I got to have to go down to Mark Burnett's office and just have a bunch of protesters. And Mark Burnett, as the show's coming out, I go to this night before party, which is the best party of television. There's one, which benefits the motion picture home, which is amazing. And I'm walking in there. I almost didn't go, but a buddy of mine calls me and says he just won an Oscar for the Russian doping scandal documentary. He's like, I don't have a date. Do you want to? I go, oh, I guess. So we're like the last two people walk in, and there's a lot of people in Hollywood are mad because I'm talking about Trump, right? This is 2018, and I get to the bottom of the stairs, and at the top of the stairs is Mark Burnett, and he's like standing there like the king of the hill, like in grade school. He's like, has his hands on his hips, breathing, looking down at me. I'm like, okay, all right, this is gonna, and then I was like, you know, fuck it. I'm just gonna put my head down and walk by him, and I get to the top of the steps, and the guy grabs me, does that throat, grabs around, you know, he was with the Bear Grylls guys, so he showed up. You know, Mark Burnett was a special forces guy in the UK, so it's not like a real one. But and I'm like, holy, and I grab his belt loop, and I said, you better let me fucking get my balance so we can fight fair. And I grab it, get to the top, now pull myself top of the stairs so we're facing off, and the guy from Survivor, the host, he's like, holy shit, he's choking him. And then I got a little air, and then I'm like, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to put some damage on his, and I'm going to rip off his Jesus chain. Yeah, get gold, rip that throw. And then I just wanted to leave some damage. But what people saw was at the top of the stairs, me, you know, doing that. They didn't see the lower part. But, and here's the thing. He was drunk. He started it. And you'd think there would be some kind of consequence for a guy that's a CEO of MGM. Like, do they have some kind of clause that they can't start fist fights? But neither of us got kicked out, which says a lot. You know, at first, though, they took me out back here and him here. They're like, and the security's like, you probably want to go. You guys, and then Brian Fogel, who was the director, who just won an Oscar, like, I didn't do it. I'm going to go in there. And he took off running in past the security guys. And then Jeffrey Katzenberg came out and goes, hey, man, Yeah, you come back in, but if you see him, he's still here. Don't fucking beat the shit out of him here. Like, this is for the picture of him. And I go, you have my word. And then I go back in the thing, and then I get a text from Marty Singer, who's my attorney. He's like, holy shit, the wife posted a picture of a bruise and said you attacked her too. I'm like, what?
Oh my God.
I'm a daddy junior? I go, you got to call the police. I mean, dude, that's all you have to, because now she's saying shit. By the way, I didn't even see her. So, I did that, filed the police, went down to the thing the next day, you know, but nobody would talk. Nobody would talk about, you know, the people with him certainly aren't going to talk. And nobody wants to be involved in that nonsense, you know, and it didn't matter. I mean, it was a really shitty thing. You know, I'm going to the thing, and it's completely about Trump, and it, you know, and I could, he could have knocked me downstairs. I'm a dad, by the way. I don't, but that was, but I did feel like, well, at least I've made it clear my feelings on this, and I've done, you know, and the thing about going around and looking for these specific tapes, each episode I'd be like, the Melania, and by the way, I believe some of these exist, you know, I don't think there's a P tape, although the sex worker from the Ritz Carlton said, oh, we do about 30 to 40% of what we do is P tapes on businessmen, you know, so I could see how it's possible. But what happened is I got to know Michael Cohen and got to know these people around Trump.
Yeah.
And Jerry Falwell Jr. was a guy, I'm like, that guy, I got to get that guy. He's the worst. Yeah. You know, Mason. And there'd been a story about him and a pool boy, right?
Oh,
our friend a former guest here just made a documentary on it.
Yes.
Billy
Corbin.
Billy. Well, yeah, I gave him tape. I helped him. I gave him tapes. I gave him the pool boy.
Amazing.
Who's a great kid. And that documentary he did such a great job. But I recorded, there were several pool boys, but I record, Michael Cohen called me to straighten me out on Jerry Falwell. It's the best tape ever, where he's like, I just want to say you got it wrong about Falwell and the pool boy and whatever. It's not a gay thing or whatever. It's just some pictures of the wife, the boudoir type. I mean, they're terrible. But that's when I went down into that deal. I go, well, that's none of my business. And I said, I just don't like it. The xenophobic and the pool boy is Mexican, and he's like, build the wall. And I said, but that's his sexual thing with him and his wife. I'm not going to. And then he goes like this. Yeah, the pictures are terrible. I still have one of the pictures. And then I hung up, and then I flew to New York to see what. Not that I want to see a picture of, but it was not a boudoir picture. And so I thought, well, I've got to get to know this young man, Giancarlo Grande, who is really a hero.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and he just was out here last week. We went to the Soho House, but he's amazing. And I thought, well, this is, you know, because Michael Cohen, we talked a million times, and I gave Billy a bunch of tape, but he lied to me. That's the problem. Like, we were buddy. I was helping him. I was on his side. I was there. And what I realized, I said, I'm not going to do the Falwell thing until the day after he goes to prison. So I waited until the day after he goes to prison, and then I did that. But what I found out is he was kind of back with the Falwells. And Michael Cohen, who's complaining that they just dropped him.
Michael Cohen today is back at the Fall.
Yeah. And where we broke up, we haven't talked in a while, because in the fall of, I think, 2020, after Giancarlo came forward and Jerry Falwell got kicked out of his own school, I said, I want you to do me a favor. Giancarlo wants out of that business arrangement. They have that land down there in Miami, that youth hostel, the gay youth hostel.
And
he owns 25% of that, and he wants to get out. Like, he wants to start his life. You know, I said, he'll take 10 cents on the dollar, what it's worth. Would you be the fixer now for Giancarlo, like you were for the Falwells with the other pool boy? And I said, that would be really cool with your redemption tour and stuff. And he's like, well, Tom, we have different journeys. You're on your journey, I'm on mine. And I was like, fuck him. That's it.
So it turns out Michael Cohen is a piece of shit. Is that what you're telling me?
You know, he did. He's about 80% good. You know, they always hold stuff back that they think may, you know, reflect badly on them. But he's, you know, Michael Cohen did a lot of amazing stuff. I mean, when he was in prison, I had a cell phone talking to him, and then something happened. He got trouble with the cell phone, which I don't know if they let prisoners have cell phone. And then a journalist called me and said, I visited Michael Cohen and he wants you to have this new number. Like we kept it constant. I was always trying to build him up, you know. It's a Jewish.
I have a question about that. So when you say he's in with the Falwells, are you just basing that on the fact that he wouldn't take on Giancarlo's case? Or because I can almost understand wanting to get back in that world.
I hear that. He had the weekend before he went to prison, they came and took him to dinner. Oh. And the tape, I mean, he makes it clear how hurt his feelings were, and he went to their granddaughter's, I'm not sure what it's called, christening or something, and he bought her a Chanel bag. I don't know. He was very hurt that they had not been in touch with him since the Trump stuff came down. And then they were, and then he made a decision. And maybe, you know, he was struggling for money. I mean, Michael Cohen lost everything, his law license, credit cards, his stuff, and you know, his
business was based on those taxi medallions, which plummeted in value with Uber.
So. Yeah, yeah, and also that thing, that's a whole other freaking thing. But you know, Michael Cohen did a lot of amazing things, and I really wish him the best. And he's got a very nice family.
It's like the thing when you're talking about the party, and now you're talking about Michael Cohen, and we're talking about this, or Giancarlo. I think the thing that's been most disturbing, I mean, there's so much disturbing over the last several years, but is the lack of courage. Like you sit there, like at a party, like when you're like, everybody knows Trump for as long. One of the first times I ever heard Donald Trump's name, I was a child, and he and his dad were keeping black people out of those buildings, you know, trying to force out. I heard my mom just say, this fucking Trump family. And it was like, it just stuck in my head. And then you go on. So it was always buffoonery. Like you could make, he was a clown and an idiot. And it was, when he came down that escalator, I laughed my ass off. I'm not going to be present. But the lack of courage people have had has been, it's been shocking.
Very shocking. You know, before he was this president, ready for president, like he came on my sports show, and he's like, hey, listen, I got a thing at the Playboy Mansion tonight for my vodka or whatever, and I want you to meet my new girlfriend, so why don't you come with me? So I'm like, he was on the show, I'm going to go with, and you know, you do a sports show, you don't, if you judged every male athlete for their behavior, so I went over there with him, and he introduced me to Karen McDougal, who was in love with him. She was a playmate. But I didn't realize his wife was there, and his wife and his daughter, and they all took pictures together. I'm like,
wait, which wife?
Melania at that point.
Yeah. Was it Melania?
Yeah. Yeah, Melania. And, but they all posed for, I was like, oh my gosh, this guy. But
well, you know, how many abortions has that guy paid for? It always drove me crazy. We're a right to life guy and all this.
Yeah.
Like, you must have like a punch card of 15 abortions and the next one's free. I mean, there's no way.
When he was on Howard Stern, he literally talked about wanting Marla Maples to have an abortion when she was pregnant with Tiffany. Like that's he actually right. says it on Howard Stern.
Todd Jr. at the 90s, Trump kicked him out of the family. He got arrested for something down in New Orleans, and my friends took care of him. My friends flew him with, paid for him to come to Maui with us, and you know, he was part of a younger people that I was sort of. Helping because of my sobriety or whatever, and he was part of that group. And it was nice very sad that his dad, that was his dad's reaction to have him having this issue. And so, a lot of people that I know from Denver really took care of him. And you know, the family, I get it why they're on board with their dad, but it is so disappointing that so many decent people like that you kind of admired that. Have got, and there's still people that are
on
with him, which says more about them because he's never changed. He's the same guy. He's going to take them all off a cliff. He's going to take everybody off a cliff with him because the one thing about him is he's consistent. He is exactly who he always was.
Completely. And if like, I remember like when I was like my whole Twitter thing with him that went on, what was instructive about it in some way was there is nothing. If you read through our hundreds of exchanges, he did not mix up any of, like, he just replaced my name with every other person. It's like he didn't mix it up. It didn't change. The plot was the same. And yeah, he was. And if you paid attention, he never paid his bills. I grew up in Jersey. We had contractors that we knew who helped in Atlantic City who never got paid and all this kind of stuff. So it's just like, it was so clear. And the idea that he's like, I mean, just like the very simple fact that the boardroom on The Apprentice is a fucking set.
Yeah.
All his.
Yeah.
So, I don't
know. And he didn't even, my buddy, who was a prisoner, said, you know, he wouldn't even remember who the people were. He goes, the people that are, he was so intimate. But there's been a lot of disappointment. I want to say this about Michael Cohen, too. He was all on board until he wasn't.
Of course.
To the White House. Like,
yeah.
The holiday season, Christmas, Hanukkah, before he, you know, left, he was like suicidal. Because Trump wasn't bringing him into the White House. Like, his feelings were so hurt. And I'm not saying suicidal. He was genuinely suicidal. They were worried he was going to jump off the Regency. Like, there's other lawyers who I befriended that were, like, just very worried. But at his credit, when he did start talking about it, you know, I said, I'm going to go to New York and find him. The Tisch family, my godson is Zach Tisch and very close. Steve was my second best man ever. And so I ran into him, and then he wanted to share. I way overshared. I shared everything to, and he got made him nervous. And the New York Times got copies of Rudy Giuliani's correspondence to him. Like, what? Trump hates him. Why are you friends with Tom Arnold? This is the worst thing. But I feel like one of the good things I did was I went public with what he said to me.
Yeah.
That he's going to defend it, and then he had to say it himself a couple weeks later, 4th July weekend in 2018. He said verbatim what everybody said. I was crazy saying all this stuff. You know,
I mean, the most instructive thing that I get with him, and I mean, he was a monster. He was a shit person for a long time. But I do believe in redemption. But when you look at like what loyalty gets you. He was in jail, COVID hit, and they fought to keep him in jail during that period of time. The people he went to jail for writing a check for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
They want to keep him in there, the house arrest. What a fucking monster.
Yeah. Well, and you know, people were like, you got to be careful that Michael Cohen's a gangster. I go, no, he's not. You get up on, there's not one of these Trump people where you get their face and you're like, I'm concerned that this guy might kick my ass. It's very disappointing because they're all cowards.
Of course.
And bullies. Yeah. And Michael Cohen, right before he came out, or he was supposed to come out, I knew he was writing a book. I've been talking to him. And then the weekend before, whatever, I tweet, Michael Cohen's book is going to tell all this shit about Trump. And then he got pulled back in. And they wanted him, they put him back in. He'll say on the tape, one of the tapes, he's saying, I got thrown in the hole because of your fucking tweet. I go, how could my tweet, why, who's paying attention? He's like, Bill Barr's paying attention, Trump's paying attention. I go, how could they throw you in the hole because of my tweet? Well, when he came out eventually, he had his ankle bracelet, and that summer, he went to have his ankle bracelet, whatever, charged up or whatever, and they pulled him in. And they said, we want you to sign this document right now that not only will you not tweet about Trump, but none of your friends or family will, which is not, First Amendment, there's no way that's why. And he went back into jail for a few days because he wouldn't sign it.
Right.
They wanted his book not to come out, but they also wanted his friends to not tweet about Trump, I guess, which is crazy. But he did go back and got that worked out somehow. I assume, though, that he withheld some stuff from his book.
Did you see that? I don't know if you watched Kimmel the other day, but what had just come out on him was the Trump had contacted Disney ABC to tell them to have Jimmy pull it on the jokes. I mean, this is the free speech guy. This is the person who's talking about, like, we can't, First Amendment, we have to.
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't go to the correspondence dinner any of those years because he's so thin skinned.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Do you think the people though that like are so loyal to him. Like, does he have dirt on them? Is it a
People say
blackmail?
that. I don't think he, you know, everybody's like Lindsey Graham, you know,
yeah,
he's,
like I wonder
Lindsey
that.
Graham is, Graham's, I think that there's something.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's Trump necessarily. I think it's Russia, but he there's something on Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham, the day before he played golf with him that weekend, was like trashing him.
Yeah.
They came out of that golf weekend and it was a those kind of 180s don't just
Yeah, something a, had to
Well, Lindsey, what they got on Lindsey Graham is that he's fucking Lindsey Graham. Like, and that's all his historically, he's up, he's down, he's, you know, the shit talk he did on Trump. There's a whole bunch of, I mean, Ted Cruz.
Oh, there was Howard, so much shit talking.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, why would you, and why would you allow yourself, you're a United States senator, for God's sakes, why would you allow yourself to be blackmailed or manipulated or, yeah, you know, have some fucking pride.
I think I think Lindsey Graham was just, because I don't think it was just the gay stuff. I think there had to be something even more untoward, or, and some of them, you know, who knows? I mean, it's like.
But just well, even, but other, like, you can look at the things that he tweeted, you know, if Trump wins the presidency, like, that was just, you know, the world of.
That, what he said that it was true, but here's the thing. Michael Cohen told me that where they're gearing up, that there's during the campaign, and they got a call from a guy in Russia that Trump knew, that was friends with Putin. He said, listen, there is a tape of that night at the Ritz-Carlton in 2013, which, by the way, I lived at the Ritz-Carlton in 2015 for a few 3 months filming a movie, and I'm sure they filmed.
They do like, everything, yes.
Jerk off for the first week. And then I'm like, fuck it, I'm jerking off. Like, I also was like.
Proud of how you jerk off.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
I hope it gets released to the public. It was amazing. Yeah. Like,
but he said, the guy said, there is tape. I got it. So don't worry. But know this, I've got it. And so that's kind of what Michael Cohen did with the naked picture of Jerry Falwell's wife and others. Oh, yeah. I got it handled, but I do have a copy. So in 2016, when Trump lost Iowa, yeah, Michael Cohen went right up to Jerry Falwell Jr. and goes, hey, listen, remember when I got you out of that jab with the naked pictures with your wife? Well, I still got one picture left, and now I need you to do me a favor for my boss and support him. Because and that was a game changer. Because once Jerry Falwell Jr., all the other scumbag evangelicals said, oh, he's doing it, so we, you know, we could do it.
Yeah, no, they organized. They out of that, it's fucking amazing. I mean, I don't think Ted Cruz is compromised. I just think Ted Cruz is just a worm. I think he just is. You know.
I mean, well, Ted Cruz, how, you know, he is an evangelical. His dad's a preacher. And it's crazy that all of a sudden Jerry Falwell's like, I'm going to go with Trump. He's the most like Jesus. Like, there's a couple speeches that Jerry Falwell Jr. gave that are so uncomfortable.
Oh, I see. So, crazy.
You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's, you know.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, and I also, my favorite is Cruz is just like, you know, Trump called his wife ugly.
Yeah.
Said his father killed Kennedy.
Right.
And it's like, and then proceeded to suck his dick.
Yeah.
It
was like immediately the next picture you saw was Cruz at the phone banks campaigning for Trump with the sign. It was just, and he looked like he was about to cry. He always looks like he's on the verge of tears.
But it makes you admire Mitt Romney. Think about Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
He is who you may, but you know.
Well, that's who he is.
There's a documentary about Mitt Romney and his family.
It's the greatest.
After the election. Yes. I think if people see that, then he might have beat Obama.
It honestly changed how I feel. I mean, his politics, a lot of things I had problems with Mitt Romney. Of course, I still do. However, the caricature of him was incorrect based on that documentary. And I'm as left as you get. But that documentary was like, oh, that impressed me. And I think he's been critical.
Yeah. And he stood up to the whole, you know, MAGA world. And
I mean, like, fuck it. There's nobody politics wise, like pure politics, not crazy hate. But then Liz Cheney, and that she can be.
She's amazing. I mean,
Can
you imagine it without Liz Cheney? And she's so articulate, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, Joe Biden, I get nervous when he talks. I get nervous when he rides a bike.
When he walks or anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, shit, here we go.
Liz Cheney just fucking, and she's got the bona fides from the conservative, you know. and she just killed it. She had more courage than the Democrats.
Oh, she was.
There's nobody. She knew she was throwing it away. I mean, Adam Kissinger, I like him too. Did I say his name right?
Yeah, both of those guys did it too. Yeah, he did too.
But Liz Cheney was so eloquent and just relentless, and you know, she knew I've given up this my career, and just this one woman was. I mean, I don't know where we'd be without
no. her. But she was the hero we needed in that moment, and you keep waiting for more. They're trickling out slowly. What's your feeling on the pace of the investigation of Merrick Garland? I know where I feel, but
I feel like the guy. I knock on wood that he's just being super thorough. I was down in Palm Beach giving a speech, and the state attorney happened to be there because we were talking about sobriety and what we're doing. What, you know, I do a lot of stuff with the U.S. Drug Court and where we try to help people and try to. So I work with, you know, judges and FBI guys and these people I'd have nothing in common with except this one thing where we want to figure out a way to help people that, you know, are addicts, to give them a chance. And he told me he's getting indicted for sure. And this guy has no reason to. And he's got to. I'm not sure where it's going to come from.
It's
but
just so glacially slow, though. And it sort of like betrays equal justice, all of that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, but it's good that the January 6th committee pushed him.
Yeah, we needed
it. I mean, stuff. We needed to be pushed. But you know, there's never been anything like this. And
I know.
But they got to, because, you know, everybody, if we're all equal, he's, you know, and I think the other Republicans are praying to God it happens. Oh. They've always wanted us to do their dirty work for them.
Completely.
And get rid of Trump, because they don't have the courage to do it. So they're like, we're going to let the Democrats fucking take care of this guy. We hate him.
Yeah.
None of them like him. None of them, to behind his back, like him.
No one likes him.
No.
Yeah. So.
But none of them want to risk losing voters for themselves.
Or getting criticized or being made fun of or nicknamed. Who gives a shit about that? But, you know, in our lives, that shit happens all the time, or work or whatever, right, or whatever. And we're like, fuck that. You know,
but the Republicans made this Faustian bargain that, like, because basically it's all about like tax breaks for the rich. If you start there, that's what it's about. So how do we get them? We get disenfranchised white people who have hate. We weaponize their hate. We say, hey, we're on the same team. You're not making money because of brown people. And when that doesn't work out, you say, well, Jews control the bank or whatever. And yeah. And they still get their tax breaks. I sound like Bernie all of a sudden. I look like Bernie too.
Yeah. You can put your mittens on and fucking go on a rant.
I know. Come on. But they, you know, that was like, so the things that have been in discovery for the Dominion voting machines and Fox were all of them. And Tucker just said it out loud. It's like our stock prices are going low. So it's, we can't tell them, we have to tell them what they want to hear, not the truth.
Yeah.
And that's what the Republican Party is.
Yeah, and it's great to hear. In the back of my mind, I thought, well, maybe Fox. You know, I worked for Fox and it's the same company, News Corp, and Fox Sports, Fox.
My family was Fox.
I worked for Fox as a sports producer.
No, but I went down. My buddy's the president of Fox Sports. He was like one of my segment producers, and then became president of Fox Sports. Like, his career's got better than mine. And so I went down to have lunch with him at the commissary there on Pico. Yeah. And the all the Murdochs were there. This is 2018. And I went up and I said to Lachlan, when the fuck is, when are you going to get rid of Trump? I mean, fucking, this is, does your dad have the power? He was sitting right there. And he goes, yeah, he does have the power. And it will happen. When he decides it's going to happen, it will happen instantly. And I go, well, I fucking hope so, man. But not, you know, the great thing about Rupert Murdoch did his deposition is he was just yammering about, it's not red, it's not blue, it's green.
Green.
Awful shit. But in the back of my mind, I always thought, well, maybe this Suzanne Scott, maybe she comes in there, maybe she has a spine, maybe she's a decent human trying to get things, because Fox does have good liberals or good smart, you know, there'll be five against one, but sometimes, and I'm just hoping somebody there is, you know, but it, no, anybody involved, and you know, they won't even let Howie, what's his name, on his show about whatever that show is on Sunday morning, where he talks about what's going on in the media stuff, this fake, whatever. Oh, and he said this.
Talk about it.
They won't let him talk about it this week. He said it. So they have, and then you watch them, and the five, I do record that because once in a while I'll go and I'm just amazed that they have it. Because, backstage they're like, fuck, this shit is fucking awful. How could we work for, the money, obviously, but, how do you do this? And they got a comedian on there, Gutfeld, and he's like the king of late night. And it's so fucking awful.
Awful.
Being a comedian that can't make fun of what's really funny or right here. And you call people liars and you're like, they're the liars, they're the fake news. And they really are fake news. It really is, and I hope something comes out of that.
Me too. I mean, the most telling thing I always loved was especially like toward the end of his presidency and even post-presidency, when Trump would call in to Fox and Friends in the morning. And be on and monologue for an hour and watching their faces.
Yeah.
Like, when is he going to stop confessing to crime? It was just because they're not, there's no brain trust amongst those three. So it was it was just amazing to watch that.
Yeah.
Every time he called in, they were like, motherfucker. How are we going to cover up this bag of shit?
Yeah, but also that sometimes they want to get off. It's like live TV, you got to hit it. And how uncomfortable they got. When he was president, they had to let him just go off. But, he's always done that, called in to do things before he was president.
Yeah.
9/11, he called in somewhere like being super weird.
I have the tallest building in New York now.
Yeah.
Oh, God, right?
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Yeah, they're like, we got Trump on line three. Oh,
there's a couple Giuliani documentaries. There was one on, I'm not sure if it was on CNN or
MSNBC.
And now there's one on the, whatever the other one is, MSNBC, that I've watched a couple of episodes. I mean, it's that guy, part of those guys were meant for each other.
Oh, my God. Well, I used to say, as the campaign started, I was like, I'm so glad everybody gets to meet September 10th Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah.
He's always been kind of a bad dude.
Yeah.
But suddenly he's like America's mayor. And he's like, it goes to speak about how horribly George W. Bush handled the aftermath that Giuliani became the hero. Because the bar was so low. He wasn't reading a book to children. So it was like.
Right. But doesn't George W. Bush and the Bush family look like kind of, royalty now that Trump is, they were certainly well-meaning.
I think about how mad I would get at Reagan. And it's like, ugh.
I'll tell you a quick story. Many years ago, I went on the Tonight Show. Well, Roseanne sang the national anthem. Let's say that first.
Yes.
Beautifully, by the way.
When you're the husband, you got to support, she sang, I was supposed to throw out the first pitch, and the guy comes up with the ball. He's like, hey, buddy, you probably get the fuck out of here. I go, yeah, I do. But I'm going to throw out this pitch because I'll never be allowed to baseball stadium as long as I live. So you can see me get my fat ass out there and throw out the pitch. And we get on the plane. I get her out of there. And she's upset. And I'm like, why are you upset? She goes, oh, my God, they're booing me. It's the worst thing ever. It's going to hurt the show. And I go, what? Come on, man. Yeah, there was some boo in baseball, like boo, pal. But it's just an experiment. And I said, I heard a lot of cheers, too. I swear to God, I heard a lot of cheers. Really? I go, yeah. I mean, I thought you were very brave. I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
She's like, well, it was fun. And so by the time we got to from San Diego to LAX or wherever our flight was, she was fine. I'd convinced her like a good husband.
Wow.
And before she did it, she said, people are saying I can sing. I want to sing national anthem at a Dodger game. They want to have me. I go, no, I got an idea. Because I have a theory that you can't do. God doesn't bless you with all skills.
He doesn't give with both hands.
But also you got to support your wife, but you have to protect her.
Yeah.
Herself, maybe. And vice versa. So I said, hey, let's do it. Okay, you can sing. Yeah. Let's do it in San Diego. No one will ever hear about it if it goes sideways. And Tom Warner owned the team, who was a executive producer of Roseanne. But anyway, we landed LAX. What happened is during that flight, George H.W. Bush had been watching the game with his friend who owned the Padres and said, "That's she's a disgrace to America." Like, he said that in front of the press.
I remember.
So there was a shitstorm there. You know, we get through going through the airport and people are up on her. As back in the day, they had the big heavy cameras and they're bumping into her. She's only 5 foot tall. And at one point, a guy camera hit her and she said, "Get him, honey." And, you know, as a, you know, that's when your wife says, "Get him, honey," you fucking.
Yeah.
So I took him down. I tackle these three guys, you know, take them down into baggage, break their cameras. And she was like, "Oh my God, you're my hero." And then, but there was a fourth guy downstairs filming me do this. So I got arrested.
Oh man.
And you know, taken to, I had to go to court and I ended up getting the community service every weekend where I'd put the orange jumpsuit on with the Hillside Strangler was up on the 405 pick up. Which is kind of a great break, I have to say, from 5 o'clock Friday till 5 a.m. Monday. I didn't have to be in the middle of our stuff. But we went on the Tonight Show, or I did, after that, and for something, and I trashed George H.W. Bush. But it wasn't like funny trashing.
It was vitriol.
It was with Johnny. And it was you know the difference. You get thoughtful, you can do some funny. But I wasn't. And the next morning, I saw Maria Shriver, and she's like, because, you know, Arnold was George H.W. Bush's.
Yeah, his fitness guy.
Like, I would always joke that I was, Trump is so bad, I'm his fitness guy. But so she goes, "Oh, I heard you talking about the president last night." I go, "Yeah." She's, "That was pretty rough." I go, "Wow, well, I'm sure he doesn't watch Johnny Carson." She goes, "He does." I go, "Well, he doesn't give a shit what I say." And she goes, "I bet he does." I go, "Okay." And she goes, I go, "Well, do you have his address?" And she goes, "Yeah." She pulled out a pad and I wrote him a note. Like, "Dear Mr. President, okay, jokes are great. And I have the right to, but I went over the line and I was mean. Sorry, Tom Arnold." I handed it to Maria Shriver. And 2 days later, a Secret Service guy comes to my house with a handwritten note from the President of the United States and said, "Hey, Tom, you can make fun of anybody you want. That's just part of the job. Hey, Jerry Weintraub loves you." It was probably the only other Jew he knew in Hollywood. He goes, "Would you join Barbara and I for dinner in Las Vegas? We're flying to Las Vegas this weekend." And I was like, "Oh, shit." I was like, and so I even George W. with people, you know, same people making fun of him, I was like, "I don't know. It's a quality family, that family." Because once,
I
a president has you to dinner, and his wife was awesome, George H.W. Bush. But yeah, it does seem quaint, all that awful stuff that happened back then, now.
Tom, I got to say, I wish you were a little bit more interesting. I'm a little disappointed in this. Holy shit, these are some amazing stories. I feel like I've only scratched the surface, but I want to get to first of all, what's coming up? Are you working on anything that is not political? Or are you
well, there's I did you know, there's a new True Lies TV series. It's really
my friend Ginger is the co-star there. Ginger
Gonzalez. Oh, she's fucking killer.
She's the best. She's
so great. Uh-huh. I mean, I went down it, you know, there's a younger guy playing me.
Yes, I saw.
And but I went down and did. They wrote a new character named Artie. It's a stretch, but it's really what would happen to my old character 28 years later. Where would he really be? And there's a line I say in the original: "What kind of a sick bitch takes the ice cream trays out of the freezer?" Well, you find out in the episode I did with them, because she's on it and she's still trying to kill me. So I had a wonderful time with them. They're very cool. Steve Howie, everybody. Yeah. You know, Cameron produces it. There's like 18 executive producers.
I doubt it's really long.
But I wish those guys a ton of, you know, and your friend Ginger is such a great playoff of that, the two of them. Yeah. I just really, really enjoyed it. She's amazing.
No, she's got the quickest mind. I've read some of her scripts as well, and they're really sharp and tight. Like, she's the whole package. She's really
awesome. She's a great person. So that you know, I did Arnold's Netflix spy series. It's supposed to be, like, you know, that comes out in May.
I can't wait to see it. What's it called?
It's called FUBAR, like fucked up.
Not beyond all repair.
And he's got, it's fun. There's a lot of action. It's fun. And I do a reoccurring thing on The Rookie Feds on ABC.
Oh, my friend Alexi Holley.
You know, but I'm, you know, I'm always looking for stuff. Me? And doing some stand up and whatever.
Yeah, you're gonna do a spot on my show, my improv show.
Oh yeah, that's very exciting. Very exciting.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I'd be dying to work with you, Tom. If I get something going, I would definitely bring you along. That's a good segue, though, Jenny. Into we always wrap up the show with things we've been watching that aren't stuff we're doing. Yeah. What have you been enjoying? You got one or two shows?
Yeah, The Offer, which is, you know, Al Ruddy. It's really about Al Ruddy, the producer, Godfather. Yeah, that's a series about him. And then Shrieking, there's a documentary that, what's his name, Jonah Hill did about his, with his real therapist.
I saw that. Is it good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the documentary's good. And then there's a show about it now, too, a scripted show.
Yeah, which it's Bill Lawrence's show on Apple.
Tulsa King, I like the slideshow. Stolen Youth, which is a documentary about the NYU, this guy that started a cult there. He moved in with his daughter. It's like, who
The Sarah Lawrence thing?
Sarah Lawrence, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And who the fuck wouldn't know that's a weird thing when the dad is living in there? That's
game prepared. That's good.
You're
winning podcast guests in a major way.
Yeah, like we should give an award for podcast.
I know we do. We're gonna make awards. This at the end of the year, we're gonna do an award show. Yeah.
We might have to have you back, Tom, and do a part two.
Like, what about you? Yeah, I think I would love that. Jenny, what else?
I've watched that. I am obsessed right now with the Murdaugh murders.
Oh. I am too.
That Netflix, series. I plowed through that in one night. I'm like. Like, I watched the first episode, I was like, this is a horrible family. The second episode, I was like, this family is really... By the third, I was like, this is the worst fucking family in the history of families.
So I finished it,
with it.
I just want to say, I finished it like this around the same, probably same time as you did, and then immediately went on YouTube and started watching his testimony.
Oh.
Brutal.
And I'm not sure that he's not going to be found not guilty, like, because I feel like that family has so much pull. Like, you think that, like, at least one of the jurors is going to have, like, some, you know, photograph of their kid being picked up at school, slid under the hotel door or something like that? Like, I just feel like that family is so awful, and how each person was like, oh, I heard they can make people disappear. And, like, terrifying, but it's fascinating. Yeah. Fascinating. What about you, Danny?
Literally took mine. But the other thing I've been watching, I'm the last to this, I'm sure. But I've started, I'm almost through season two of Party Down, which I missed. I used to it was one of those shows that I would sometimes at a party say, oh, it's great, because I knew clips and I knew people on it. Yeah. And so I lied that I liked it. But boy, I like it more than the lie I told to say I had seen it. So, and I know they have new episodes coming on Stars now. So I'll
give that a whirl. I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, it's so
good. It's so good.
So good.
I'll definitely give that a whirl.
It's such a good show. Well, Tom,
this has been so fun. Like, seriously,
it's good to talk to adults. You know, I'm around a 7 and 9 year old, but almost all the time, and it's good to talk to. You know, I talked a lot. Sorry. But it's good to chat with you guys, and you're very...
it's a podcast, so the worst thing would be for us is if, like...
You didn't talk.
We've had it occasionally. I'm not going to say who, but you're drawing them out, and we're juggling. I found like I could have... I felt a little bit I could kick back today.
No, at one point I was like, I forgot we were doing the podcast because I was just sitting here listening to your fucking Michael Cohen stories.
It's showing off, you guys.
No, it's great. So thank you. Thank you, Doing It Nation. We'll see you next week. Stick around, Tom, though.
Don't go anywhere just yet. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Doing it with Danny and Jenny. Doing it with Danny and Jenny.
Jenny.